My little visitor.
I worked in a small family-run nursing home for 6 years as a nurse's aide. It was an orphanage before it became a nursing home. Unfortunately, before being shut down, the orphanage had a history of severe abuse and neglect. It's not gossip the owner herself has told us. In this nursing home, on multiple occasions, when residents get close to death, they always see a little girl. One of my patients was a very alert gentleman. He knew all our names and was very alert and oriented. I was passing dinner trays and saw that he had his back turned. He was talking and laughing to a corner. I knocked and asked him who he was talking to. He chuckled and said, "This little girl came into my room. She was scared." He died 3 days later. About 6 months later, we had another patient screaming about a little girl grabbing his feet, and she needed to leave him alone. He died that night. Other coworkers have had the same experience. She'd come up over the years. It's always the same thing. They see her, and then they die. It's very unsettling.
All right. We've had a welcome to the True Scary Stories of the ED podcast. This is the podcast where two stand-up comedians read scary stories from our uglies, which are our fans. What's up, guys? This story came to us through our Facebook group. If you want to send your scary story to us, you can do it through the Facebook group, the Instagram, or on our website, which are all at True Scary Stories with ED. This is a podcast that has commentary after every story. So if you don't like that, you should check out our podcast, Just the Terror, that comes out on Sundays. Supposedly.
Depending on if I'm driving back from a gig.
Right? Where you're listening to this one right now. Wow, that was a hard one.
Yeah.
That was a hard one for me. Because I was thinking about what I was going to say already.
Yeah, you were right in it.
What I was going to say is this is not the first time I've heard of this. In fact, this is probably like the fifth time I've heard of this kind of thing happening at a nursing home. I think there was a really popular story on the news that it was about a cat who would go to the room of people who were going to pass away. And how did the cat know? And then there were also other people who are like able to predict of the through dreams and things like that, who was going to pass away in the nursing home. Nursing home, obviously, there's a lot of lives coming. There's a lot of lives going, a lot of energy passing through. This makes complete sense to me. And I think it's a more common occurrence than a lot of us know. Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it has anything to do with the actual orphanage history or if this is the little girl that we've heard that sometimes appears before the Hat Man.
Oh, I was thinking that this, I don't know why, but I thought this was at a nursing home.
Nursing home that used to be an orphanage.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Nick.
That's it.
Okay.
It's a very interesting, it's a scary tale.
All right, let's keep going. All right, with that, we are getting on to today's topic, which is flesh gates.
Yes, and do you know what flesh gates are, Edie Gibson?
I feel like if I typed it in, it would get me to a website I don't want to go to.
Well, yeah, it could probably be wrongly put in there.
Right, and that would break my computer down.
Yes.
And then my mom would find it and ask me what it is.
Oh, your mom still has access to your computers.
What's this on your search history?
No,
flesh gates, what is that?
Well, it's not what you think, ladies and gentlemen. Flesh gates, although similar to goatmen and skinwalkers, they're three different things. You know that, right? Skinwalkers, of course, are Navajo shamans, witches who performed a ritual to be able to transform into animals or animal hybrids, who can mimic voices and transform, but they aren't flesh gates. Goatmen are a sort of fey-ish creature who can transform into humans and mimic them. That's really all. And they're not really evil either. They're more like pranksters. Flesh gates can transform into humans, and maybe animals, mimic their voice. They can't perfect it or mimic the memory or behavior, but they learn quickly. And in their normal form, they all look different. They have different origins, all these shapeshifters. So all of them are shapeshifters. Flesh gate is like a shapeshifter. But you know how we've always thought, well, why would a skinwalker be in the northern part of America if that's not Navajo territory? Well, apparently, it was probably a flesh gate story that we were talking about. It's generally agreed that flesh gates are predatory towards humans, with many people believing that they lured people deeper into the woods in order to eat them. Some also believe that flesh gates are partly responsible for the missing 411 disappearances, though no proof has been given to that claim. There are many reports of people using white ash to protect themselves from flesh gates, and many people believe that hanging a bag of ash over a doorway or keeping one in your car can protect you from them. Some people even put some ash on their forehead as a method of protection. Some avoid wearing bright colors in the woods because in Southeast Asia, the Midwest, and in many parts of Africa, wearing bright colors in the woods is a major no-no. It's known to that the bright colors attract animals, but it's also believed that bright colors can attract malevolent spirits. No one really knows the exact origin of flesh gates. So you kind of got what they are?
I got what they are. Let's get straight into the flesh gate stories. Next Yell for Help, written by Zeb Zuber.
In sixth grade, I went camping with my youth group in Virginia. The people who went were several 11-year-old boys, my youth minister and his wife. The boys all shared one tent. My youth minister and his wife had the only other tent. Where I slept, my head was right at the corner of the tent, and in the middle of the night, I would always be kept awake by the cold. While I laid awake, looking up at the tent, I would occasionally hear frog or bird noises outside. But at one point, I recall hearing a young girl say, "Hey," repeatedly, right outside the tent. I woke up two of the other boys and asked them if they heard it. One of them did, but the other said he could only hear frogs. Then, as if the girl was becoming desperate for attention, she started saying, "Please help me," in a trembling voice. My two friends and I agreed to wake up the others. All five of us left the tent and saw no one. Our youth minister came out of his tent and asked what we were doing. I said, "We thought we heard someone outside." So he and his wife went to the edge of the woods with flashlights. They found nothing. We all went back to our tents to sleep. Then after about 20 minutes, I heard the trembling voice say, "Why won't you help me?" This time I quickly grabbed a flashlight and opened my tent. Still nobody. We told the camp manager, or whatever you call them. They said they would look into it, but never got an answer. For the past 7 years, I've blown off this weird event as some prankster in the woods. The creepy thing is that, what if it actually was a little girl in need of help? Or maybe the creature was mimicking its last victim. And if we went out to find that little girl, would we be the ones yelling for help next?
All right, very creepy. So this is the first I've ever heard about the flesh gate. I've always thought Skinwalker or Goatman, whatever. We've gone over it a million times. So now I wonder how many times we've gone over stuff that it was actually this.
Yeah, so...
But now we're all learning about it together. But what do you think of this one?
Well, in this one, we don't have the description yet of what they look like. But when you hear what they look like, you're going to be like, oh, we have kind of talked about these guys, thinking they were Skinwalkers. It's very interesting to think that maybe they do kind of mimic their victims in order to lure in another victim. You know, that's just something that I was like, that's why I included this story.
All right, well, let's keep going. This next one is called The Park After Dark, and it comes to us from Livin' La Vida Loca 182.
I'm from Scotland. During colder months, it gets dark pretty quickly here. This encounter happened at around 11 p.m. to 12 a.m. My friend Sam and I were hanging out at this big park. There's little to no lighting in this park. We were tough teenagers, just walking around, smoking, talking nonsense. We decided to go to the swings within the park so we could sit down and have a smoke. We're roughly 10 feet away from the park. There's this smell. I can't explain it, but it's rancid and physically makes me gag. We laugh and joke about it being a girl we don't like at school. As we're walking to the swings, the smells got a lot stronger. I look around to see what it could be. Now, between us and the swings, there's a small wall with a bench in front of it. There's a guy squatting behind the bench. The guy looked at least 4 to 5 feet while squatting, so it would have at least been 8 feet standing. The guy seemed to be completely naked, hairless, and a pale white-gray color. We both stared at it for a few seconds before looking at each other as if to say, "You see it too, right?" Then the thing starts giggling like a 4-year-old girl. We both ran like our lives depended on it. We were a good distance away into the streetlights, and we just sort of laughed it off and went home. Sam seems to have forgot about it, but it still sends shivers down my spine. It's been about a month, and I still refuse to go to that park after dark.
Right. I would not want to go to any parks after dark. It seems like the nicest thing you're going to find there is a homeless person sleeping. The worst things are, these things. And now that I'm hearing these stories, they definitely kind of sound like things that we may have heard before.
Yeah, because we were always saying that, oh, Skinwalker, but the Skinwalkers are very much Navajo territory. And we'd always be like, well, we're hearing these stories. This one's from Scotland, even though I don't know why the guy's name is Living La Vida Loca. You know, so it's, and now he's not. Now he's Living La Vida Scared. I did hang out as a teenager in a park. My mom thought that I was doing drugs.
But you weren't?
No, I wasn't.
You were just hanging out in a park, which
yeah,
is actually...
Yeah, we just hung out in a park.
That's actually worse, because it's like, well, you're kind of a loser.
Yeah. Well, my friends did the drugs.
Oh, you just watched?
I just didn't. I just hung out, made them laugh.
You just watched, and you're like, hey, you guys want to make a daisy necklace?
Yeah.
You're like, I don't know how to do that. Oh, I could teach you if you want to.
Hey, we should talk about weird things.
You guys want to go down the slide and watch my hair stick up?
Yeah.
The Game Isn't Over Yet, written by May 1400.
I'm a girl and live in North Carolina of the United States. I was 15 at the time of my encounter and was definitely not a believer in anything supernatural, paranormal, or anything of the sort. It happened while I was at a local summer camp. There was absolutely nothing special about the day. No weird lights, people, animals, sounds, nothing. It was just the same camp schedule as I'd grown used to in the past 2 weeks I'd been there. My age group had just finished lunch. We were able to persuade our counselor to let us play a game called Scatter down by the lake. It's like a giant hide-and-seek in the woods. Now, we had played this at least 20 times before that day. Nothing weird had happened to any of us. We all grew up playing in the woods, so it's not like we had an aversion or fear of it. But for some reason, that day when our counselor shouted Scatter and I ran to find a hiding place, it became a whole new ball game. I had run as far as I could while still being able to see the lake, as were the rules. I'd found a huge old uprooted tree that I decided would be perfect hiding. I laid down as close as I could against it, on the ground, and waited. I'd been there for about 5 minutes when I suddenly heard a voice calling my name in a weird, dreamy-like way. And not just any voice. My mom's. My mom and I are extremely close, thick as thieves. So I'd know her voice anywhere, and I would swear in my own grave that it was without a doubt her voice. But I knew it couldn't be her. She was 20 miles away at work. Even if it had actually been her and she had come to pick me up early, the voice wasn't coming from the lake. It was coming from further out in the woods beyond the border of the camp. I knew I should have run away from the strange mimic mom voice, but I couldn't. It was almost hypnotic. It messed with my thoughts and gave me doubts like, well, it could be my mom, or what if she's hurt? I have to get her. All these things were flooding into my mind like someone had broken a dam I didn't know was there, until they finally overwhelmed me. Emotions got the better of me, and I took off running in the direction the voice was coming from. I ran as far as I could with only this strange voice as my guide. I couldn't have run for more than 5 or 7 minutes when I got to a clearing. The voice suddenly stopped. When I entered the clearing and didn't hear my mom's voice calling me anymore, I could finally think clearly again. I started to have a little alarm bells go off inside my head, saying, you idiot, that's not your mom, run. But I couldn't run, I didn't know where to run. I'd gotten so far away, I had lost sight of the lake by the camp and had absolutely no idea where I was, and I was completely exhausted to boot. With no other options than to sit and catch my breath, I did just that. No sooner had I sat down, more warning bells went off in my mind. I quickly did a 360 survey around the clearing and noticed a strange noise. It wasn't the continuation of the voice before, no. It was the distinct sound of chattering teeth, like if you were cold. Only there was no one else around, and it was the middle of June in North Carolina. There's no way someone could be cold. That's when I heard leaves and sticks crunch on the edge of the small clearing. I realized something was watching me. Then whatever it was moved, and fast, in circles around the clearing, almost like it was circling prey. It was at that moment I knew whatever it was had led me out there, away from the rest of my group, exactly like the predator my instincts had been screaming at me that it was. Without any other option than to try and escape, I took off in the direction I thought it came from. I sprinted as fast as I could, all the while hearing the chittering of teeth and sticks crunching behind me. I didn't know what to do. I didn't dare turn around and see what was chasing me. I knew that if I did, I would slow down. It felt like a lifetime running away from this thing before I finally saw the lake. And even though I didn't think I could, I ran faster than I ever have in my life. I broke the tree line and ran to the lake where I knew my friends were. At this point, I felt safe enough to stop, look back, and see just what had been chasing me. But when I did, I only saw a fleeting form running back the way I had come, and the distinct sound of chittering teeth. When I finally found my counselor, who was the seeker to find all of us, I was hysterical with fear. I hugged her as tight as I could. She tried to get me to tell her what happened. When I finally calmed down, I just asked, "Were you calling my name?" But even before she said anything, I already knew the answer. After all, it had been my mom's voice that led me away from everyone else. But what she replied with was much more bone-chilling to me. She told me, "No one called for you. We didn't know you were gone. Everyone's still hiding. The game isn't over yet."
All right. So yeah, here we have the classic making yourself sound like somebody's mom to lure them.
Yeah.
Which seems like it barely ever works.
yeah.
Because you get that feeling like, oh no, this isn't right. But they try it. And that's the same with like a goat man and a skinwalker. I actually was doing some more research on skinwalkers and found that they would sometimes mimic the crying of a baby to get mothers to come out of their houses. And not only skinwalkers, but there's another creature that does it. The one that we were that I was talking about the other day. Now that I'm trying to think of it, I'm not gonna be able to think of it. But you go ahead.
Okay. So now here we have like you said, the skinwalker would mimic a baby, which I think the skinwalker was more animal-like. It could only like try to lure you in with mimicking sounds, noises, babies crying. Here we have whatever this is, this cryptid, that is filling your head with thoughts about somebody's in danger. So there's a weird hypnotic part to this where it was like, well, maybe my mom's hurt. Maybe this is happening. And I did read that they do make a chittering sound when they're kind of on the hunt, which is kind of like just teeth cackling together. Which is a noise that they just make naturally, other than, you know, screams or whatever else. So this is, not only do they mimic somebody you know, they get into your head, you know. And it like I said, it kind of sounds like all those missing 411 cases where people are like, why would this kid go this way? How did he get up this far, you know?
Right, yeah. Like, when we did that episode, I think it was like 3 weeks ago, about all the people who go missing and then not only are they missing, but they're missing and then show back up years later, or their stuff shows back up years later and it's like it was pristine. So it's like those people were somewhere. Are they, we even speculated maybe they are trapped in some kind of time, like alternate timeline, and then came back.
Yeah.
And there's also like, what if they get abducted by aliens and then they get put back however much longer. But this, yeah, it seems like another creature entirely that could kind of explain what's going on in the national parks. All right, let's keep going. The Dog and the Whistle, written by Totally Tory.
I think I have two Fleshgate stories. This happened several years ago. The second happened a couple of times over the last couple of months. Here's the first story. Back in the summer of 2010, I stalled my horse at a public boarding facility. Many people would come and go at all hours of the day. Being that it was summer in the South, I would typically come late in the evening, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. to train, after it cooled off. As this was a barn, there were always barn cats everywhere. People would drop off unwanted kittens, mama cats would have kittens in the spring, you get it. About a week before the event, I was told about how a barn hand's new Australian Shepherd dog would pick up the kittens by the scruff of their neck, walk them over to the horse watering trough, get them in, or is it trough? Trough. Get them in the trough, dunk his head under the water, and hold his breath until the kitten drowned. Not typical dog behavior at all. One night around 10:30 p.m., I was there alone, putting everything up, getting ready to leave, when I heard what sounded like palms and bare feet slapping concrete at a very brisk pace coming my direction. Very different from the sound animals with non-retractable claws make on concrete. So I turn to face the noise. Out of the corner of my eye, I see what could be described as a creature that looked like Gollum from Lord of the Rings, but with more backbone and ribs showing, running on all fours. The abdomen was so sunken and malnourished that it was basically just rib cage, stomach cavity slightly wider than the spine, and hip bones. His ribs could be counted. As I turned the rest of the way to face it, it became that dog. At this point, I'm like, what the hell? So I look at him and say, I don't know what you are, but you better stay looking like a dog or we're going to have a problem. After I said that, I kid you not, this dog cocked his head to the side and smiled at me. I nope as fast as I could. I never ended up seeing that dog again. Apparently 3 days after the incident, he ran away and no one knew where he went. Here's the second story. I lived in a townhouse that sat in front of a good bit of forested area. An area where my two cats like to go do cat stuff. We somehow developed a system where I could whistle for them, and whenever they were, they would come running. This went on for nearly every evening around sunset for 2 years. 3 months ago, however, I went out behind the house later than normal, 10-ish. I walked to the tree line, whistled, and turned around to walk back to the door. I hear my whistle back, the same tune, and the same weird whistle I whistle. At this point, the feeling of dread just settles into my stomach. I hurry inside. The cats turned up about 5 minutes later, by the way. I brush it off as maybe someone out in the woods messing with me and continue with life. Then about a month later, I go out and call for the cats. My whistle once again meets me from the trees. I said something like, "Stop that," out loud and hustled back inside. Until we moved out a month after that occurrence, I had this feeling, an image in my head of some dark figure laying, trying to rush the front door every time I would close it. I would lock the deadbolt super fast and check the peephole. It got to where the feeling was intense enough I salted the threshold and drew a sigil on the door. Since moving, everything has been chill.
All right. Yeah. Well, luckily, since moving, everything's been chill. It hasn't attached to you. And it seems like a lot of these things are not like attachment, like a demon would be. It seems more like a more of like an animal kind of thing where it hunts you because it needs something, not because it's spiritually connected to you.
No. It wants to eat.
I think what I was thinking of may have been the djinn.
Oh,
I think that
okay.
may have been the thing I was trying to remember before.
So in this event, you know, we have the barn hand that introduced a dog to the environment. And then all of a sudden the dog would do a non-dog thing by picking up the kittens and then drowning them in the water. And here we have the flesh gate turning into the dog after it got scared, which makes me believe that this flesh gate started mimicking the dog, got rid of the actual dog and started becoming it in order to come onto the property.
Right.
You know, and was basically eating those kittens.
Yeah. So what I had read was that a similar thing was happening in a village, and what the villagers would do was put out offerings so that the creature wouldn't eat their livestock, like their chickens or cats or whatever. They would leave something else out so it would eat that and leave them and their livestock alone. So maybe it's kind of like the same thing.
Yeah.
All right. Let's keep going. Up the ditch.
About 3 years ago, I was driving to my dad's house from across state in Pennsylvania. He lived far out in the country, down a desolate paved road that crossed with an old dirt road, as well as some unused railroad tracks. The entire area was surrounded by deep woods and unused farming fields. There were a couple of dilapidated old houses, an old well, and a few old cemeteries nearby. I arrived at those crossroads I mentioned earlier around 1 or 2 a.m. I decided to pull over and relieve myself. I stopped my truck about 60 feet from said crossroad, close to a small farm shed with some old equipment in it. There was a single light bulb on the side of the shed. It provided the only source of light in the nearly pitch-black darkness of the night. On the opposite side of the road from the shed was a steep drop-off into a ditch, on the other side of which were some dense woods. As I was peeing, I was suddenly overwhelmed by a massive feeling of dread, like someone had just punched me directly in the gut. I'd been around these woods all my life. I used to walk around the area at night as a teenager. I assure you that I had never felt so scared as I did at that exact moment. I quickly finished up, goaded on by my sudden sense of panic, ran back to my truck, got in and locked the doors. I flicked the headlights on, cranked the engine so badly that you could hear the gears grinding, but all I cared about was getting out of there. As soon as I began to turn back onto the road from the shoulder, my headlights shone over the ditch. The lights picked something up on the other side of the road, about a foot from the asphalt. My stomach immediately sank again. There was something crawling out of the ditch on all fours. It was hunkered down like an animal, but its body looked almost human, albeit a human that was attempting to mimic a stalking animal. It didn't look hairy, but it was a uniform color, almost dun yellow. Not yellow like a cougar or lion, but a sickly yellow that reminded me of jaundiced skin. Its head was shaped like an oval. It had no hair or ears that I could see. The mouth was very, very wide. It looked like a thin, straight line that extended all the way across the creature's face. It was very, very slightly upturned at the edges, like a slight smile. The eyes were very small and beady, just like two black pinpoints. It had no nose or any facial features aside from the mouth and eyes. Since I was around 7 feet from it, I'm certain it wasn't just a person wearing a mask. Even the body sort of seemed wrong, but I can't pinpoint why. I couldn't see feet or hands. There was about a foot of grass at the edge of the road. Whatever it was, I'd say it was about the size of a 12-year-old. I could tell by its movements that it had been in the process of slowly creeping up the ditch to the road. When my lights hit it, it sort of retracted slightly, like it was surprised that it had been discovered. I didn't stick around long enough to see what was going to go down next. I floored the gas, flew all the way to my dad's house, and stayed up the entire night, freaked out. The part of the experience that still utterly scares me to this day is that whatever I saw was definitely, definitely stalking up that ditch to get me when I had my back turned. Otherwise, I can't possibly explain what had triggered those emotions when I stood there in the darkness with my guard down completely. I don't know what could have happened if I had lingered around a few minutes longer. But I'd rather not think about it.
All right. Yeah, so this it totally sounds like the same thing. I'm glad we don't live near the country. Seems like that's where all these things hang out.
Well, yeah, because they were once, you know, it's the last part of the forest that's been taken down and not turned into city.
Right, yeah. And just like how we see coyotes here more often because they don't have the land to hunt anymore, they were seeing more of these things more often because basically we're taking over their homes.
Yeah, and I did read that they do kind of harbor a little bit of anger against humans.
Right, well, who does? Even I do, and I am one. I mean, it's hard not to be annoyed with us. We are the worst.
Yeah, like, oh man, come on guys, I'm gonna eat you now.
Right, and the guy's like, yeah, I mean, I don't really care because I have another home in another dimension, but it's just like, it's really rude of them to just think that they can get rid of the forest.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
You know?
I don't know. I just like to vacation there. And now I feel like I have to eat them. You know? I feel like I have to eat them to keep them out of here. I have to scare them.
Or at least smile at them really weird.
Anyway, did you get your human hunting license? No. Oh, well, you can't go to the other dimension with me then. No, I'm not risking it. We got caught last time.
What if there is? I mean, obviously, you know, that was the whole thing with the government that they do have a deal with aliens. Like, you could take so many humans. I mean, what if there's a deal with these guys? Like, hey, you can eat one. You know how you see cars just
you
like...
You can eat one.
you see, like, cars just abandoned on the side of the road, right. And you're like, where's the person?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You can eat one.
You can eat one.
But they have to drive a Ford Focus. Why a Ford Focus? People don't look for people when they have a Ford Focus.
Yeah, they don't care about those.
All right, let's keep going. Before I Knew It, written by Gio Tesso.
I would like to share with you a true paranormal experience of mine, to the best of my memory. At my extreme apprehension, about half an hour ago, I called the one friend who was present in both encounters to confirm the accuracy of events that I remember. I asked questions carefully and sequentially to ensure that she remembered all of the minor details. Everything was confirmed. I never encountered anything paranormal prior, but the friends who I was with genuinely believe that they had. Part 1. The Cemetery. About 10 years ago, I was in college in Tennessee. I had a friend who was studying photography. I often joined her to go shoot photos of scenery. One of the favorite photo ops were local cemeteries. After noticing some strange orbs in the nighttime cemetery photos, we became fascinated with the phenomenon. We began to pursue the elusive orbs, finding maybe a dozen in 100 photos. As a tough guy skeptic, I always brushed it off as dust or bugs reflecting in a camera flash. But it would be lying to say that I was not somewhat intrigued by the suggestion of something paranormal in these cemeteries. One evening, I suggested a cemetery that I had visited before. It was an hour and a half drive on country roads into rural Tennessee. This cemetery borders a state park. It's surrounded on all sides by miles of dense forest, save for a long old winding road with a few modern and a few very old houses. With the sun setting, we got in the car and began the trip. As I mentioned, I'm a skeptic, but there's something unquestionably unnerving about the old houses. They look like plantation manors you would see in a history book or an old painting, decrepit during the day, but at night, on that long, dark country road, they are ominous beasts looming out of the forest. They're just abandoned houses, but contemplating on the brutal history of plantations in the South, the giant shadows in the forest became absolutely sinister. The state park alongside the cemetery is home to the ruins of a large 200-year-old mining operation. Traces of mining are now limited to a series of enormous gaping holes in the forest floor, some 50 feet across and 50 feet deep, a once towering pig iron furnace now only protruding a few mossy bricks above the ground. On the unlit road, we pass the old abandoned plantation manors, with their square frames and tall pillars cloaked in darkness. The moonlight makes their shadows twist and writhe like grotesque living things. As we approach the cemetery, I imagine fleeting visions of a bloody and horrifying history. Slaves brutally forced to dig mines so deep that they lost sight of the sun, forced to toil in the searing furnace and handle the molten iron. It dawns on me, there were no graves spared for the workers. My photographer friend and I park on the small dirt shoulder in front of the large cemetery. The cemetery grounds are unusually expansive, a 1,000-foot-wide glade surrounded by vast forests. Tombstones range from the newest at the entrance to the early 1800s in the rear, punctuated by lots of suspiciously vacant stones. The oldest stones at the forest edge of the cemetery are little more than small rocks with no visible markings. It's not unusual for small and old cemeteries, but the most ancient stones, whose engravings had not yet been completely claimed by the time, reveal a disturbing fact. Most of the graves are children. At the rear of the cemetery, we cannot see the entrance, merely a solid line of forest in all directions. The moonlit glade is strikingly contrasted against the blackness of the forest, which seems to aggressively reach up towards the night sky. Struggling to complete its reclamation of a time in history which should have never existed, the feeling is ominous. The forest has a threatening presence. After an hour or so of taking photographs of Midnight Cemetery, we leave without incident. The next day, we meet to analyze the photos. We're stunned at what we see. Orbs, 100 in a single picture, none in the next. Some that curiously hang over my shoulder and photos of myself. They are pale but colorful. There's thousands of them in the photos. I strain to remember dust, pollen, and bugs, but can recall none. I'm confounded. One thing is clear, we have to return. A few days later, we resolve to make the dark journey again. Interested by the photos we shared, two friends join us. We're now four strong, cameras and flashlights in hand. We once again depart the safety of the campus with the setting sun. The moon promises to light our way again. We approach the plantation manor houses, and as if their sinister intentions steal away the once comforting moonlight, cloud cover plunges us into pitch darkness. The writhing pillar shadows on the old houses are gone, replaced by layers upon layers of shadows. One of the girls gasps. As we pass the manor, she swears she saw a pale figure in the abandoned window. Had it been one of those damned souls? On the dark country road, assaulted by the sinister shadowy structures, it is not strange to believe that the spirits of heinous slave owners have found no peace here. As we approach the old cemetery in total darkness, the clouds are unrelenting. We park on the shoulder again. We walk east towards the oldest graves. While taking photos, we cannot help but notice a change in the atmosphere from our previous visit. Coyotes howl far in the distance, but the sounds of the forest are discomfortingly absent. It is dead silent. The crisp, cool air begins to feel cold. The surrounding wall of trees that once reached for the sky has completed its effort. We are surrounded in pitch black, cold silence. Our small flashlights do not penetrate the darkness. They serve merely to illuminate only our companions in the encompassing void, the graves. There's no wind and the air feels stale and thick. The threatening presence of the forest is pervasive. Hackles rising, we return to the car. Before departing, I take a small blue pocket flashlight and walk northhand into the forest to relieve myself. As I'm walking back towards the car, I notice the passengers have started my car. They seem to be frantically shining their flashlights towards the south of the forest, opposite the direction that I walked. I reach the car after being separated no more than 5 minutes. They turn their flashlights north towards me and the panic begins. The other male in our group was not only a skeptic, but probably the most calm and level-headed person I'd ever known. I'd never heard him raise his voice, never seen him get angry or upset in all the years that I'd known him. The instant I open the car door, he leaps across the driver's seat and grabs me by the collar, yanking me quite forcefully into the car. His eyes are crazed. The expression itself is terrifying. The girls are screaming and crying. The passenger slams my car into gear. They're all screaming that we have to get out of there. I've never seen people so terrified in my entire life. Racing down the tiny road, the shadowed manners and surrounding forest seemed a little closer to the road than they did on the way in. After we put some distance between us, the manors and the cemetery, my passengers finally calmed down enough to tell me what happened. A minute or two after I had walked away from the car, they saw my blue flashlight in the forest. The South Forest, opposite of the direction that I had walked. From the South Forest, they then heard me repeatedly calling for help. I had never made a sound. At that moment, they were deciding to go south into the forest to look for me. When they saw me approaching from the north, they completely panicked. They believed some sinister forces very nearly lured them into the forest. I had heard a lot of ghost stories, but I never heard of an entity trying to lure people into the woods. Last night, while recollecting my memories of the event, something truly horrifying occurred to me. This was not the first time something had tried to lure us into this forest.
All right. Well, this might be news to you, but it's not news to us. Stay away from the forest.
Yeah, that's a big one.
And that's a lot of the missing people cases in the National Forest. A lot of them walked away on their own.
So, and it could be like they it heard like somebody call them.
Yeah, it seems that with most of them, it's like it seems like a choice. Like they wandered off like somewhere close by and then were snatched up. But in all the cases, there's not signs of a struggle. So it seems like kind of like this kind of thing. Let's keep going. All right, we're on to the last story. And with that, do not forget to give us 5 stars after this because we work very hard on this podcast and it really helps us get out to more people. And then we keep doing it. So besides that, we have shows coming up. We're going to be in San Luis Obispo doing stand-up with Agustino Zoida. The date is?
June 19th.
June 19th. That's actually Paso Robles, but in the San Luis Obispo area. Nick, what other shows do you have got coming up?
This weekend, I will be in San Antonio as a quick headlining gig down at Jokester's Pub 22. So this Friday, Saturday, I'll be in San Antonio, so come on out.
All right. And besides that, don't forget to join us on the Facebook group, the Instagram, and our website, especially if you're going to share one of your scary stories with us. We'd love to hear it. All of that is at True Scary Stories with Edie. Anything else?
Yes, I wanted to share my two scary stories.
Okay, go ahead.
So I'll tell you about the weird dream I had last night that woke me up in a terror. I was there was a baby in my dream that was wanting me to invite it into like take care of me, and I almost agreed, and it was known that it was a ghost baby. It was like, I'm a ghost baby. Right? And then I stopped myself because I was about to say, of course I'm gonna take care, of course, come on in, you know. And I stopped. I was like, and I just like freaked out right after that, like it was the most I've ever woken up in a
shit. Right, you were like, no, don't. Sometimes you do stuff in your dream too, and you're like, I don't want to do that. And yeah, you see yourself doing it in the dream. You're like, wait, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, first off, I don't want a kid. Second off, I'm not trying to invite no spirits.
Yeah, it's like you see yourself saying it in the dream. You're like, what?
Yeah. I was like, hold on, Nick. We didn't rehearse this. And then the other day, now I was wide awake. I went to get a cup of coffee, and I grabbed my coffee cup, and I put it on the kitchen counter. And for a split second, I saw through the bottom of the coffee cup, like a glitch in the matrix. I could see the tiles of the kitchen counter.
Whoa.
For a millisecond. And usually I'm just like, I didn't see it. But it was so distinct for that millisecond. I was like, well, I'm not going to write this off. I'm going to talk about it. I don't know if if it was just me seeing things, which is how most people are, like, oh, I haven't had my coffee, I didn't see anything. But I was like, no, I saw the tile. So it was very strange.
Wow, maybe you're getting your powers.
No, I don't want it.
Well, no one ever does, actually.
Yeah.
Haven't you seen any movie? It's always like, why me? And it's like, what's your power? I could just see through coffee cups.
Yeah, that's it.
And like, oh, can you see through like regular? No, just coffee cups.
Yeah, like I could see how your mouth looked drinking coffee. Like you don't get to see it. Well, I get to see it.
What is it about the cup that, it's got to be ceramic. Yeah. It's got to be ceramic. Oh, does it have to have a handle? No, it doesn't have to have a handle.
Look, like, drink some coffee.
As long as there's something hot in it.
Yeah.
So not iced coffee.
Well, there was nothing in it. Just
you want to see my demon baby? You're just like, can we keep him?
Oh, man, I know. It was weird. And
yeah, can we keep
up.
Him? I'm like, he's bleeding from his eye socket.
Yeah, he had some weird
I'm like,
looking
I don't
eyes.
Think we should.
Okay.
All right. The part two of the story is called The Nowhere Police.
There's a 13-mile hiking trail in Montgomery Bell State Park in Middle Tennessee, which I have completed many times over the years. I only discovered the cemetery from the previous story because this trail intersects the cemetery at around the 10-mile mark. There's several backcountry shelters along the trail, two of which I've camped at. The shelters are basically three wood walls and a roof in front of a large fire pit. One shelter is about half a mile due south of the cemetery. The trail leading between the cemetery and this shelter is rather well developed. Well developed as a road can be after being abandoned for 200 years. The campsite is named Hall Springs for the array of natural springs that emerge from the underground between the cemetery and the shelter. There are ancient stone structures along the abandoned road that appear to be from the same time period as the mining operation. They look similar to chimneys, but there's no central opening, so they appear more like giant pylons beckoning to something that no longer exists. To reach Hall Springs Shelter, one would typically hike the first 10 miles of backcountry. Several years before the first encounter, I had invited a friend and her young brother to camp with me. They were not as keen on long hikes as I was. Knowing about a nearby intersection with the cemetery, I suggested that they be dropped off there as a meeting point so I could quickly guide them to the camp in daylight. A late start for me set our rendezvous at dusk, but they only wanted to camp anyways. The abandoned road makes only about the first half of the half mile from the cemetery to the camp. It is peculiarly wide for a backcountry trail, 6 feet across, straight and flat, lined on each side by a ditch, then immediately the wall of dense, impassable forest, a perfect hallway to hell in the middle of forest. After spending the day prepping the camp, cutting firewood and clearing brush, I set off on the one-way path directly to the cemetery. The abandoned road, the hallway, offers a strange atmosphere. The woods just seem wrong, the path out of place. I paid it no mind as I made my way to the rendezvous point. Uneventfully, I picked up my guests and led them back down the path from the cemetery to the camp. Dusk sets. The last light faded from the night sky as I lit a large campfire for cooking dinner and keeping us warm. My friend and her brother came in their own vehicle, against my suggestion of being dropped off. I did not like the idea of leaving a car parked on the side of the road, as there were no parking lot for the cemetery whatsoever. The campfire was comforting. The ethereal fog produced by the cold spring waters rising from some mysterious underground source was not. Well into the dark of the night, as the fire waned, we all heard a distinct voice yelling loud from the north. I sat up from my bench bed and stepped towards the forest. The light of the campfire made a sharp gradient, ending immediately in foggy blackness, so dark even the forest was obscured from sight. Just at the edge of fire's light, I stopped with my ear towards the voice, discerning whatever I could. Words I could not distinguish, merely a male voice, gruff and loud. While I could not perceive words, there was no mistaking an authoritative, demanding tone. Demanding that I comply with words that I failed to understand, my fears had been confirmed. I knew the source of the voice immediately. The police had found an abandoned vehicle on the side of the road. They were demanding that we return immediately to face the consequences. The voice was commanding that we come north, back to the cemetery, to answer for our crimes. I'm not a criminal, and thought at once that I must return to meet the police officer in the cemetery to explain that we're simply camping and apologize for the inappropriate parking. This train of thought made perfect sense to me, but simultaneously it made no sense. We're in the middle of nowhere, at the end of a dead-end road in the middle of the night. My friends were upset but not stricken that we had been busted, as I suggested to them. I agreed with them that either the police officer would come down the trail directly to us and we would work it out peacefully, or in the very worst case, the vehicle would be towed and we'd simply call for a ride home. The night passed with no police officers and no more voice from the direction of the cemetery. Not long ago, I'd easily explained the voice calling from the dark forest, yet an uneasiness stayed with me throughout the night. I slept waiting for something unknown at the front of the shelter with a crowbar firmly in my hand. We survived the night, but as I recalled these two stories, I remembered a story from my youth, told to me and my fellow Boy Scouts at the time. Local legends about this area are extensive, as a Google search for White Screamer or Werewolf Springs will reveal. The old mining operation was made possible thanks to a railroad running alongside the forest. And in the 19th century, according to these stories, a train transporting a traveling circus derailed. All animals were recovered, save for two Borneo wild men. Perhaps all paranormal encounters can be explained by drawing extraordinary conclusions, as I did by relating my experience in both encounters. But even as a man of science, I would be lying, however, to say that I am not intrigued by the possibility of that which is far beyond my explanation.
All right, well, you're lucky you got out of there alive, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
This was a really interesting story with a lot going on. I think there was more than one thing at play here. I think they got mixed up in a whole bunch of stuff with, like, the orbs and all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was more than just the one thing. What do you think?
Well, I thought it was very interesting. Here we, again, have a case of something mimicking a voice in the woods, but it, like, focused specifically on this guy who is like, I'm a law-abiding camper, who I like to bring my friends on law-abiding camp trips. So this voice was like, well, I'm going to be a police officer. And it put into his head that, hey, what I'm telling you right now is the law and you should follow it. That's why he said, like, oh, yeah, for a moment I believed it until I really thought about it.
Right, because it's kind of just giving you the implication of, like, yeah, you should trust me. Come on. Like, well,
yeah,
why wouldn't
you
trust me?
Come here right now, which is very interesting that's what this cryptid, you know, kind of like saw in the person.
That means it has to, like, know about law enforcement. Like, not only as it, you know, hunting people, but it has to know the structures of human communities. Like, oh, police officers, they have this job.
Yeah.
People have to listen to them. That means it not only, like, is it a creature of its own different species, but it also memorizes what humans, like, community is based on.
Yeah.
So it's actually taking an interest. It either, like, there's no way it could figure that out unless it was watching TV.
Like, how else would it bad boys.
But how else would it figure that out? Because it's, like, in the woods. Well, and how would it figure out about cops and, like, laws and things like that? Unless it maybe is, like, some kind of alien kind of creature.
This is what I figured out. See, you're getting it. Although this guy thought it was a police officer, it was just an authoritative voice.
Oh, okay.
The guy thought it was a police officer.
Okay, so that could have been him making that conclusion, not the guy being like, not the entity being like, it's the police.
Yeah, it's just the entity being, come here, you need to come here, which you hear in the woods. Hey, get over here. You know, so.
Right. And that kind of goes along with when you would hear, like, your mom calling you or whatever, that, like, what seems like a lot of these entities will mimic your parents because of the nature you have to just do what you're told quicker.
Yeah. And the fact that this was a railroad crossing, a mining part of the forest, and also a plantation at some point, there's a lot of angry, authoritative voices.
I see. So, yeah. Okay, I get it. So he was probably, the entity was just, like, making himself as dominant sounding as possible.
Yes.
And the guy was thinking, oh, that must be.
It must be a police officer, because that's who I answered to.
And I think simply through observing them, he could have came to the conclusion, oh, that guy's going to do what he's told to do.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine if that's what
I know.
Did?
I would be, like, actually embarrassed. I would be like, wait, that's what you think of me? Like, oh, yeah, I kind of thought you were, like, the loser of the group.
You're a nerd. I mean,
I thought you would just do, like, what you're told. Like, you're kind of a square.
I read
do you guys still
first...
Do you guys still use that word, square? Square. Yeah, because, like 20 years ago, I would say, maybe 30 years ago, when people would come here, they would call the kind of guy that you are, like, a square, a dork, a loser. I don't know if you still call people that.
Your friends call you that when but, you walk away.
Yeah, that's what you would be. Yeah, like a dork.
Like, your friends are like, oh, I'm going to grab a blue flashlight and go pee in the woods before we go. Like, they were picking on you, and that's why I did it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, because, like, where I'm from, I'm kind of, like, not that cool, so it's kind of fun to, like, be one of the group.
Yeah, I like picking on people.
I get why people do it, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm gonna eat you, and
you better be yummy. Those are the two things. So we've learned about flesh gates in this episode.
Wow, we learned a whole new thing to reference when we're reading these stories. Well, maybe it's a flesh gate.
Yeah.
We're learning every day.
Yeah,
and more and more creepy spiritual things.
And remember, guys, they mimic your voice. They like to mesmerize you. They have super speed, excessive strength, and they can even shapeshift, supposedly.
Whoa.
So there's a lot going on with this flesh gate.
Yeah.
And nobody knows if they are cursed spirits, evil spirits, or just cryptids.
Mm-hmm.
There's no telling.
All right, cool. Very scary. Well, I'll make sure to keep an eye out.
Keep an eye out. It all happened in like Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Tennessee.
It's kind of suck to be like in Pennsylvania, and then every time you hear about something scary, it's always there. It's always in Pennsylvania.
Oh,
it's always in Virginia. It's like, God, gosh darn, man.
And there's just so much open area in Pennsylvania.
Right.
So I did a college gig once in Pennsylvania, and it snowed so heavily, and I missed my exit and had to go down this dark, dark road where I didn't know how to get back on because I didn't have any money for the toll, and I was in a rental car and was afraid of a $150 charge. And, man, I could have been flesh-gated.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be cool if you got flesh-gated.
I don't want to be flesh-gated.
that'd be pretty cool.
No.
Yeah, so I heard there's some campers over here. Why don't you guys want to come over and we'll flesh-gate them?
And he still did my gigs.
So you guys know about airplanes?
Hey, so you guys ever, like, want to eat each other? You ever just look at your friend and say, man, you look tasty? Because, like, I'm looking at you like, you look tasty.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
This guy definitely eats people.
Like, people with brown hair, they're pretty tasty.
They're pretty tasty.
Realized. And you got brown hair. Is that natural?
Yeah.
Yeah? I could smell it. It smells good. Yeah, you smell good.
So who's in a relationship? Who's going to eat each other after this?
Who's going to eat each other after this? Who's single? Who needs someone to eat them? Come on. Anybody? Anybody? Any of you guys?
Any guys?
All right.
I'm selling merch. I got t-shirts.
Forks, knives.
From the people I've killed. I've got t-shirts from my victims.
Yeah.
This was Nick's shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was just going to donate them, but if you guys want to. All right, guys. We love you. Be safe. Watch your hands. And we'll see you on Sunday.